Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette, dated August 23rd, Sunday, 2020. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article updating us on Restore Illinois Phase 4, Day 59. Illinois Impact, Douglas Man, Iroquois Woman Among Deaths, Local Positivity Rates Remain Low. Two area residents in their 80s, a Douglas County man and Iroquois County woman, were among 17 lives lost to COVID-19. Saturday, the state announced all four of Douglas' deaths have come in the past 30 days. Paxton's Clara Peterson became the second area elementary school to acknowledge a positive student test. Like Mahomet's Middletown Prairie, which reported two student cases last week, close contacts will be placed in quarantine. Of the 7,405 new tests in Champaign County, 30 came back positive Saturday, a rate of 0.4%. The county's 7-day positivity rate also remained low and unchanged for the third straight day, 0.3%. With U of I students back, positive tests in the 11 to 20 age group are up. The most county cases by age, 21 to 30, 475, 25.2% of all cases, 11 to 20, 379, 20.2%, 31 to 40, 330, or 17.6%. Continuing on the front page, article headlined, "It'll Be a Test," the University of Illinois. Students returned to class Monday. Experiment in CU pits campus know-how versus threat of spread by Bob Asmussen. It's been a quiet summer, COVID-19-wise, in Champaign-Urbana. Case counts and the rate of infection remain low. Now comes the unknown. Adding as many as 50,000 University of Illinois students to the mix when classes start up again on Monday. College campuses across the country have seen COVID-19 spikes as students return. CBS and CNN reported in recent days that at least 19 states are seeing a rise in cases on campuses. Notre Dame moved undergraduate instruction online for 2 weeks. Michigan State is going fully remote for the semester. The University of North Carolina had to change its plans for in-person instruction after a high early case count and will be all remote this semester. NC State went to remote learning for the fall semester after more than 500 students were placed in isolation or quarantine. Is that going to happen here? Marty Burke sure hopes not. He thinks in-person learning can work during the upcoming semester and beyond. "We are quite confident as long as everybody does their part," Burke said. "That's the key." It will take constant testing, which Burke has a hand in. The U of I chemistry professor and associate dean is the lead researcher on the university's saliva test project. He was featured Friday on a CNN report that detailed the advances made at the U of I. The university is conducting 10,000 tests daily, with a goal to double that number. Twice a week testing will be required for students. In order to stay in good academic standing, all students living on or near campus must be tested. Those who fail to comply face academic penalties, including expulsion for repeat offenders. School officials hope they don't have to go that far. Ramped up testing is only part of the plan. "It is by no means a silver bullet," Burke said. "It has to be done in concert with wearing masks, social distancing, washing hands, and avoiding indoor parties without masks where super spreader events can happen." There are no guarantees the students will follow all the rules, but I have great faith and confidence in our students, Burke said. We are a community of scholars who care passionately about making a difference. Young people have a very strong drive to get together and have fun. We know that. They know that. The message isn't, don't socialize. The message is, socialize safely. Earlier last week, Burke was driving home past a row of fraternity houses. One had pulled its table tennis setup outside in the yard. Members were wearing masks while playing. I've never felt so proud to be an Illini, Burke said. That is what we're talking about. Other schools have noticed the testing program at the U of I and want to do it too. There have been in the order of 100 we've been speaking to, Burke said. There have been a lot of really great discussions and a lot of great exchanges back and forth. We've learned a lot from other universities, and we've tried to share everything we can in real time. A public health dream. The U of I campus spans Urbana and Champaign. Students frequently interact with the communities at grocery stores, gas stations, restaurants, etc. Burke thinks the frequent testing will help the university to be a strong partner with the cities. The U of I's modeling predicts there will be a bump in the rate of positivity tests. Burke said the first 2 weeks of classes are critical. This is the time for everybody to go above and beyond, do something special, be extra safe, be extra careful, he said. The university has had open dialogues with Champaign Mayor Deb Feenan and Urbana Mayor Diane Marlin. They've shown tremendous vision and leadership, Burke said. They've done preemptive measures to make sure we don't have any super spreader events at bars and restaurants. U of I officials have talked to business owners. University leaders understand the hardship caused by COVID-19. If students are sent home, it will take a financial toll on CU. Our goal is to stay open. Then everybody in the community wins, Burke said. If we're open in October, November, all those businesses are thriving because we were able to pull this off. We're all investing in that future. The U of I is also working closely with the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District. Thanks to the protocols the U of I put in place, Health District Administrator Julie Pride isn't fretting about the return of the students. Due to the planning, modeling, testing strategy, and cooperation that is in place, I am not anxious, Pride said. Pride said there will be COVID-19 cases among the students. We are confident that the processes put in place will limit outbreaks, Pride said. What the U of I testing and tracing program does is a public health dream. It is allowing cases to be made visible, so public health mitigation strategies of isolation, contact tracing, and quarantine can prevent spread. There are concerns among CU residents. Pride gets it. I want the community to know that the U of I, CU PhD, local government, healthcare, and the business community are working in concert to ensure a safe reopening and a safe semester, Pride said. The health district and the university will keep a close watch on the positivity rate and hospital capacity daily and will make adjustments when needed. The only hope we have. When it comes to in-person instruction during the coronavirus pandemic, put U of I religion Professor Bruce Rosenstock in the skeptical camp. Sitting for an hour in a classroom is exactly the environment where COVID spreads, Rosenstock said. The mandated twice-a-week testing gives the U of I a chance to have in-person instruction. It's the only hope we have, Rosenstock said, and it only depends on students complying with all the other mitigation efforts, wearing masks, social distancing, and not congregating in closed spaces. I don't have a lot of hope that all those mitigation efforts will be complied with. Rosenstock has seen troubling signs on AlmaCam, which streams live video of the area around the alma mater statue at Wright and Green Streets. Most people are wearing a mask. That's good, Rosenstock said. But there's absolutely no social distancing. Rosenstock is teaching two courses this semester, both remotely. His choice. I would normally be teaching in person, said Rosenstock, who has been at the U of I since 2002. There are several factors in his decision to stay off campus. First of all, I'm in an age group demographic, 65 years and older, that is endangered, he said. It's just too much risk for not the right situation to be in the class with the students. To have them seated 6 feet apart wearing masks, it wasn't, even under the best circumstance, the kind of classroom that I would have wanted to teach in. He is all for remote instruction. I'm more able to teach in a Zoom conference setting with the number of students that I have in the way that I want, Rosenstock said. He has one class with 13 students, which would require a room that seated 50. Rosenstock likes to work in a smaller circle and be more engaged with the students. Another class includes 60 students, which is over the state-imposed limit of 50 for in-person gatherings. Rosenstock hopes to someday return to in-person teaching, maybe in the spring, but more likely next fall. We'll see where things are, Rosenstock said. I would be very thrilled to be able to teach in the spring if we have a vaccine. I'm worried about it. Paul Selvin has been at the U of I since 1997. The physics professor is taking the fall semester off, part of his yearly routine. Selvin, 59, has multiple sclerosis, which compromises his immune system. He needs to avoid COVID-19. I will basically not go into town because I'm worried about it, Selvin said. Selvin is concerned about the mass of returning students causing a surge in COVID-19 in person. In-person learning had still some anxiety. John Welty Peachy enters his eighth year as a U of I associate professor in recreation, sport, and tourism. He is teaching two graduate courses this semester. Half of the students will be in the classroom, and the other half will be joining online. His first in-person class is Monday in Huff Hall. One course has 13 in the room, and the other will have 6. Plenty of space for social distancing. So what is his level of concern? It's moderate, he said. The university certainly has novel protocols in place. Chancellor Robert Jones sent out a mass email Friday explaining the reasoning behind allowing in-person instruction. It made Welty Peachy feel better. It sounds like this could work, he said. I'd like to be optimistic with that, but then you think, well, there's a lot that couldn't work too, such as, we have no control over what students do outside of campus, Welty Peachy said. He has been in his office and feels safe there. It's in a campus building, access to which is restricted to those who can prove they have tested negative for COVID-19. You can't deny that there is still a level of angst for all of us teaching in person, he said. There is still some anxiety. His family is taking the virus very seriously. Wife Andrea is a teacher in Rantoul. Campus life will change for Welty Peachy. He will visit the office less frequently than in the past. I will just be on campus when I absolutely have to be, Welty Peachy said. Otherwise, I'll be working from home. U of I chemistry professor Zan Luthy Schulten is teaching a graduate course this semester. I am very proud of my chemistry department, she said. I think we led the way on this campus getting the saliva test up and running. Luthy Schulten checked out the room where her graduate course will be held in Noyes Laboratory. It's fantastic, she said. Not everyone will be there in person. Her teaching assistant and 3 students elected to take the course online. Luthy Schulten usually does her virus testing on Mondays and Thursdays. She has asked her students to follow the rules. I feel very comfortable with them, she said. Luthy Schulten, who has been at the U of I since 1990, said the school and professors are doing a good job accommodating the needs of the students. Keeping everyone informed is important. People need to know where it is they have to go and what's expected of them, she said. It has to be stressed again and again. One needs to learn how to maneuver in this world. Do we really have the ability to handle this? Selvin said. To U of I's credit, they have a very impressive program to tap. He doubts students who are learning remotely will follow the rules in terms of testing. This is a serious question, Selvin said. That's a very big issue. Universities that have abandoned limited or no testing. That is completely crazy, Selvin said. Continuing on the front page, an article titled Pro-Police Crowd, Silent No More, Urbana Rally by Anthony Zilas. Community members filled the parking lot of Lincoln Square Mall on Saturday, some with American flags, others dressed in shirts that read Back the Blue, and about half wearing masks as the sun beat down on the blacktop. We've got media here, radio host Diane Ducey said over a microphone as she stood on a podium in the corner. So you want to make sure you've got CDC protocol you're following. That makes us all look good. The crowd swelled to several hundred people, enough to snap up the supply of signs that read, Champaign County supports our police, the name given to the rally. Patriotic music blared, the Pledge of Allegiance was read, and attendees bowed their heads in prayer in between speakers who disavowed what they've seen as the vilification of police in protests and riots since the May 25th death of George Floyd in Minneapolis. I'm just really sickened by what's going on in our country right now, said Tim Bogus, a former captain in the Champaign County Sheriff's Office, who organized the event, along with Champaign County board member John Rector. It was a dual message today that Champaign County supports our police, and God bless America. You either love our country or you don't. If you don't love it, there's nothing I can do about it, he said. It's the best country in the world. In the weeks after Mr. Floyd's death, a diverse group of thousands of community members marched in peaceful protests through downtown Urbana and across Champaign to decry police brutality and systemic racism. Both cities' police chiefs attended the rallies, and both knelt in solidarity with the protesters. Both cities' mayors attended those rallies, and both were at Saturday's as well. The speakers at Saturday's rally focused on protests like the one August 12th, when members of the Champaign County Anti-Racist Coalition wrote messages on the building, sign, and sidewalks at Champaign Police Department headquarters, along with vitriol toward police and looting in Champaign and larger cities. I just wanted to show love to the officers and their families, Rector said after the rally. There's been a lot of negative stuff out there. I just wanted to show something positive, show a little bit of love, show support. These are super tough times on everybody. Obviously, I respect both sides. Everybody's got the right to go out and talk and share and gather together like we did. I understand both sides need to do that. I also understand that we need to bring people together and let everybody know that we need to do that. It's tough being a police officer. Tough. I had a son that went to Iraq and Afghanistan. As a parent, you worry. As a spouse of a police officer during these times, or that being your son or daughter, it's like, that's a lot of pressure. It's on their families or friends. It's on their loved ones. Among a wide array of demands, protesters have called for the prosecution of police who kill civilians, an increased emphasis on de-escalation tactics, and partially defunding or abolishing police departments and directing those funds to other public safety and community building initiatives. Bogus said the souring sentiment toward police as protests swept the country from both public officials and civilians didn't sit right with him. While he said he supported the peaceful protests following Mr. Floyd's murder, he doesn't understand the specific requests of anti-police demonstrations. The violence against police, the lack of support from prosecutors, where the police are going out and doing their jobs, they're following the laws, they're making arrests for violations, and prosecutors are undermining what they're doing, Bogus said. I'm not saying in this area, but we don't want to happen in our community what's happening in bigger cities, where they're just rioting and it's complete lawlessness. I support the protests 100%. I agree that there needs to be changes in law enforcement. I don't agree with the violence. I think they lose the message. I know people don't like hearing it. Black lives matter, but all lives matter. For some reason, that's divisive to say that. I think my life and John Rector's life are as important as anyone else's. Matt Stuckey, who runs the Back the Blue Champaign County Facebook page, told the hundreds of people in the crowd, almost all of whom were white, to turn and look at those around them. Look at how many people are here, he said, and for the men and women in blue that are here, I want you to take a good look. The thing that has been said around all of these protests is, this is what community looks like. Well, I want you to know, this is what community looks like. We'll have your back no matter what. Former Champaign police officer Mark Briggs closed out the rally by leading the crowd in a Back the Blue chant. In his mind, an event like Saturday's was a sign that public sentiment isn't what it seemed to be for the last few months. There are a lot of people in our community who have been silent about their feelings about the mistreatment of police, and it takes guts and courage to come out here like all of you have done and take a stand for what's right, Briggs said. These have been very difficult times for all of us in the community. There's no question about it. You look at what's going on in these larger cities with these so-called leaders of government. Do you feel me? I have a message for those leaders of government, so listen closely. We are the voice of the people. Your job is to serve us, not the other way around. If you were sworn into your position in your office, there were going to be difficult decisions that had to be made. None of those included you taking a knee and villainizing police and coddling criminals. If that's the position you're going to take, I hope you enjoy it, because you're on your way out. The silent majority are silent no more. Continuing with opinion from Tom Kasich, titled Poll, Race for Davis's Seat as Close Now as in 2018. A recent poll of voters in Illinois' 13th Congressional District, which includes Champaign-Urbana, gives Democratic challenger Betsy Londegren a narrow lead over incumbent U.S. Representative Rodney Davis. But Londegren's 43% to 41% advantage, with 16% not sure, is well within the poll's margin of error of plus or minus 4.5 percentage points. So it just confirms what everyone expected. The race is as close as it was 2 years ago, when Davis defeated Londegren by less than one percentage point, or 2,058 votes, in the 14-county district that extends to the Illinois suburbs of St. Louis. The poll of 500 registered voters in the district was taken July 31st through August 7th by RMG Research for the group U.S. Term Limits. That group is trying to persuade Londegren to endorse term limits, a position she resisted in 2018. I believe that every election acts as a term limit, she told the Belleville News Democrat that year. And a Londegren spokesman said that the candidate would not let polls or outside groups determine her policy positions this year either. She's going to continue hammering Davis on health care issues, including lowering costs for prescription medicine, the target of more than $125,000 worth of television advertising in the last week. Davis, now running for his fifth term, has also withstood endorsing term limits. U.S. Term Limits contends that Londegren would win fairly easily if she signed the organization's pledge, which says that as a member of Congress, she would co-sponsor and vote for the U.S. Term Limits Amendment of 3 House terms and 2 Senate terms and no longer. The 13th district poll showed that 55% of those surveyed strongly favor term limits and 22% somewhat favor them. Only 13% somewhat oppose or strongly oppose term limits. If Lonergan signed the pledge, the group said, 46% of those polled would support her, 31% would back Davis, and 23% would be unsure. U.S. Term Limits is conducting polls in 12 House districts nationally. The 13th is the only one in Illinois, and in Senate races in Iowa and Maine. Nearly every poll showed the same thing. Between 85% and 95% of Americans are unaware that their representative in Congress opposes term limits, said Nick Tombolidis, executive director of U.S. Term Limits. And a candidate who signs the pledge to back a term limits amendment would pick up about 13 points in the polls on average. He said it's not uncommon for congressional candidates to avoid the term limits issue. We are pointing out that term limits is the most popular and bipartisan issue in America, and it is going virtually ignored by candidates and the political class, Tombolidis said. That's baffling. They are missing a huge opportunity. We think it would be a no-brainer to campaign on this issue and earn support. RMG Research is run by pollster Scott Rasmussen. According to 538, Rasmussen's polls are fairly accurate, earning a grade of C+, but they have a slight bias toward Republicans. With those caveats, here are a few more interesting nuggets taken from the 13th district poll. More people disapprove than approve of the way President Donald Trump is doing his job. Some 43% either somewhat or strongly approve, while 53% either somewhat or strongly disapprove. Crucially, 47% strongly disapprove. That's a notable change from 2016 when Trump defeated Hillary Clinton in the district, 49.4 to 44%. Trump does especially poorly among women, 58% disapproval, 18 to 34-year-olds, 60% disapproval, and non-whites. Democratic nominee Joe Biden fared no better overall than Trump, although the survey was taken well before the Democratic convention, where he formally became the candidate. Biden's ratings, 17% were favorable, 24% somewhat favorable, 14% somewhat unfavorable, 39% very unfavorable. And lastly, more people have a favorable opinion of Davis than unfavorable, 40% to 35%, although 24% are unsure. His highest favorables are among men and those 55 and older. Lonergan's highest favorables are among women, 41%. Both have high percentages of voters who don't appear to know much about them. In Lonergan's case, for example, 43% of voters age 18 to 34 say they are not sure what they think about her. Overall, 32% are unsure. That suggests that advertising could be a helpful tool to help define her. As of June 30th, she had more than $2.2 million on hand to devote to messaging. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the News Gazette for Sunday, August 23rd. Please stay tuned.